On behalf of the President of the United States, it's my great privilege to welcome Mike Pompeo as the new director of the Central Intelligence Agency. You are stepping up to lead the finest intelligence gathering operation the world has ever seen. The men and women serving under your command give true meaning to the word courage. They often put their lives on the line and often in great obscurity. They will be greatly benefited by the wealth of experience and character that you will bring to this leadership role.
We have a right to go out there and correct the record. And I think that over and over again, there is this attempt to go after this president and say, well, that can't be true, and that's not right, and the numbers weren't there, and there's a rush to judgment every time.
The 45th president is already signaling some major changes in the world order, Trans-Pacific Partnership and Trade Agreement. He did deliver on a major campaign promise because he promised to get us out of it. Today he withdrew. He said it's a great thing for the American worker.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Opening Bell. Today is Tuesday. It's January 24th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of our show, another business day up and running all over the world. In Britain is where we will start this morning because there's developing news. The British Supreme Court has ruled on Brexit today, and the ruling is one that will obviously put a little bit of angst into Prime Minister May's plans to move forward with the exit from the European Union. This is the ruling earlier today from the Supreme Court.
Today, by a majority of 8-3, the Supreme Court rules that the government cannot trigger Article 50 without an act of Parliament authorizing it to do so.
That means members of Parliament will have to vote on the Brexit and the actual triggering of that Article 50. The Attorney General of Great Britain, Jeremy Wright, after the decision today, says Prime Minister May obviously disappointed.
So the government will comply with the judgment of the court and do all that is necessary to implement it.
This will not necessarily mean that there will be no Brexit. It just could mean that there will be a slow Brexit. Perhaps the Parliament will have the opportunity to slow down Prime Minister May's chance of triggering a Brexit. That was scheduled to begin in March. There is not enough support to overturn the will of the people in this case. Parliament does not have enough support right now to overturn Brexit, but they could certainly slow it down and make a soft Brexit. Big decision there from Great Britain this morning. How is it affecting markets overseas? On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning in Europe, the DAX and FTSE a little bit higher this morning. The CAC in France is a little bit higher as well. We're seeing numbers all up over Asia this morning and in Europe, rather, and in Asia, mixed numbers. The Nikkei was off about half a percent, off about 103 points, rather. The other markets in Asia generally higher this morning. Where did the Dow futures stand? Dow futures up 11 points, S&P futures and NASDAQ futures a little bit higher as well. Crude oil is trading up as well, about 26 cents, 53.01 a barrel. Are you tired of the news here on planet Earth? We thought maybe you might want to have a change of scenery, and so why not space? Incredible Stories from Space, a behind-the-scenes look at the missions changing our view of the cosmos, is a new book from Nancy Atkinson. She's the editor of Universe Today. Nancy is a friend of The Opening Bell. She was one of our first guests when we started last year, and so we're happy to welcome her in this morning. Nancy, I've had a chance to read your book. I love it. What gave you the motivation to write this book? Why Incredible Stories from Space?
Well, I really didn't have writing a book on my radar at this point in my life, but a little over a year ago, I got a call from a publishing company, Page Street Publishing. They're a subsidiary of Macmillan, and they had an idea for a book about NASA's robotic space missions, and they wanted to know if I'd be interested in writing it. So that's not a call you get every day, so I was really honored and thrilled to be asked. I think it's every writer's dream to be able to write a book, so I'm especially grateful for this opportunity to share the passion and enthusiasm that I have for space exploration. And it was a great opportunity to get the chance to talk to a lot of people at NASA and get kind of an inside look at NASA's robotic mission to explore the solar system and beyond.
It is in a remarkable when you see them all in the book, Incredible Stories from Space, you really see how busy NASA has been over the last 10 or 20 years. You have the Hubble mission, New Horizons, Kepler, Curiosity, all of these missions. They really have been busy, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. I think, you know, as I say in the book, human missions have always been a big part of my reporting career because, you know, that's just the nature of space exploration. It's what people find interesting. Robotic missions have always kind of tugged at my heart. You know, they're these great spacecraft. But what I really found, and I had the opportunity to interview 37 NASA scientists and engineers for the book, what I found is that, even though these are uncrewed missions, you know, robotic missions with no people on board, there, still is a lot of people involved, and behind every robot is a lot of human effort. And I found that these people bring a lot of dedication and enthusiasm and emotion to what they do, and they do it with great care, which, you know, is required because one tiny little mistake could cost you the entire mission. But I think these people exemplify how science is really kind of a human endeavor. You know, it takes humans to ask the questions to send us off on these journeys of exploration. It takes humans to build the spacecraft, of course, and figure out the trajectories of how we're going to get these spacecraft out there. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to be awed and amazed at the intrinsically beautiful images from space and wonder at the marvelous new findings from faraway places.
And you bring up a good point, the humans behind a lot of these missions, most of these missions. I mean, we all always hear about the human heroes of Apollo, John Glenn, Gene Cernan, who we just lost recently, and everybody seems to know those names. But there are names that are involved in these robotic missions. They've done some unbelievable stuff. You talked about the preciseness of having a spacecraft travel millions of miles and hit the bullet or hit the target right on. I mean, there's some heroes here that really should get the attention.
Right. I was able to interview a wide variety of people from, you know, larger than life people like Alan Stern, who is the New Horizons principal investigator, to people who work completely behind the scenes, such as mission navigators or system operators. So I really enjoyed talking to everyone, but especially I think getting those kind of behind the scenes, you know, how do you drive a Mars rover from, 150 million miles away and, you know, how do you fix a spacecraft that, could be millions of miles away from Earth that has suddenly quit working? So there's a lot of, really kind of cool stories and being able to, for most of the people, I was able to interview them face to face. So being able to see the emotion on their face and as they were sharing some of their stories with me was really wonderful.
You mentioned Alan Stern, and he's got an amazing story about how the spacecraft that was on its way to Pluto, at the very last moment, they lost contact with it. Some amazing stories like that, aren't there?
Yeah, really, there are. You know, that the spacecraft was just 10 days away from doing its mission. It had been traveling for 9.5 years to get out to Pluto, you know, 3 billion miles away. I think that just exemplifies how big our solar system is. But, 10 days away from their doing their prime mission, and they lose contact with the spacecraft. And, yeah, you know, these engineers, I had the chance to talk with Alice Bowman, who is the mission operations manager, and she told me how, you know, it was like the worst feeling in the world to lose contact with the spacecraft. But she said they just, you know, they had been training for this, even though the spacecraft had been relatively trouble-free the entire mission so far. They had trained for things like this, which, you know, is what NASA is known for, training for every possibility. So they just took their training and they methodically worked through the issue and they regained contact with the spacecraft and were able to do the primary mission. And it's, you know, sent back some amazing, amazing images of Pluto.
You mentioned those images. The book, one of the great things about it is there's not just all of these wonderful stories, but there are photographs too.
Yeah, I was able to include over 240 different pictures from NASA. I think it would have been really disappointing to tell all these stories and not to be able to include the pictures, because I love sharing the images from space. You know, the images of the Mars landscape that we're getting from the Mars rover, and also from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is in orbit of Mars. And there's the images from the Hubble Space Telescope showing us distant galaxies and nebula and all these amazing things that we've seen over the lifetime of Hubble. So, yeah, I was really grateful to be able to share so many pictures from all of these missions.
Out of all of these missions, is there anything that you learned in writing this book and putting it all together that maybe you didn't know before? And what kinds of science might the public not know about that it should know about?
There were some stories that I didn't remember some of the missions happening. Like the Cassini mission had a companion mission called Huygens, which was a lander that landed on Saturn's moon Titan. And I had forgotten about how the Huygens spacecraft, when the spacecraft was on the way to Saturn, they discovered a problem with the Huygens spacecraft, that they weren't going to be able to get the data from it. You know, so here was this spacecraft on a mission, and there was no way to get the data. Well, they worked it out, and they figured out how to do it. And, here was a mission rescued, from so far away. So that was fun to get the details of that. A lot of science... things that we've learned from the Hubble Space Telescope, that, black holes have been kind of theorized for decades, but the Hubble Space Telescope has confirmed that black holes really do exist. We're learning more about the nature of dark energy and dark matter, things that are kind of foreign to the general public of what do they really mean for my human life? When we look out into the solar system and we look out into the universe, we really can bring all that stuff back to Earth. You know, when we learn about Mars climate history and what happened, all indications are that Mars used to be warm and wet, and it used to have a thicker atmosphere, but it no longer does. So learning about that will help us learn about our own planet. There's this thing called comparative geology, where if we only have one our own Earth to think about, we might have a skewed idea of what's possible. And looking at other planetary bodies, other places in the solar system, gives us more knowledge about our own planet.
You mentioned from our own human perspective, what would you say among all of these missions would be the top mission, the one that has provided the most information about who we are and our place in the universe?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question. I think the mission to Pluto was just really enticing, because we had no idea what this world was going to be like. The best pictures that we had from the Hubble Space Telescope were just kind of pixelated blobs. We didn't really know what the surface was like. And what we saw there, if your listeners remember some of these pictures that the spacecraft sent back of this kind of huge heart-shaped area on Pluto, which was really endearing. It's kind of like Pluto loves us, even though we've demoted it from planethood. But, these amazing landscapes of totally alien landscapes, but yet they're Earth-like too. The mission to Titan showed us a world that, again, is really alien, but it looks so much like what early Earth could have been like. So, another mission is the Kepler mission, which has been finding thousands of other planets orbiting other stars. So previous to about 1995, we had no idea if other planets were out there, or if, our solar system was the only one like it. Well, we're finding a lot of other solar systems that are similar to ours, but also a lot that are very different from ours. You know, planets that are extremely close to their star, planets that are huge gas giants that are close to their star, as opposed to how our solar system is with the rocky planets on the interior of the solar system and the gas giants out on the outer part. So just knowing that there are other worlds that are similar to Earth, we haven't found exactly Earth 2.0 yet, but just knowing that there are other places out there or other planets orbiting distant stars, it just really changes our view of our human life and our life on Earth.
If someone listening to this conversation is one of those people that thinks that the U.S. doesn't do space exploration anymore after reading this book, they'll really change their minds, won't they?
Yeah, we've got a lot of missions that are, that are going on right now. There's, of course, a lot of Earth-orbiting satellites. Today, NASA just released some pictures from the GOES-16 spacecraft, which is a kind of really state-of-the-art weather satellite that's able to improve weather forecasting. I heard a report on it that it said that, right now for, thinking of the tornadoes that went across the southern U.S. yesterday or this weekend, right now the best kind of forecasting of tornadoes gives people about 15 to 20 minutes warning. Well, with this new spacecraft, people should be able to get warnings within 8 to 10 minutes. So that's a really great improvement in giving people better warning systems for storms, better forecasting abilities. And then, of course, NASA is known for exploring the solar system and beyond. So we've got a mission that just arrived at Jupiter this past summer, and that's just starting to release some amazing images of Jupiter. There's a mission that launched this fall that's going to an asteroid. It's going to scoop up some of the asteroid and bring it back to Earth. It'll be the first time that we've had samples of asteroid return to Earth. And then there are future missions. There's another Mars rover that's on the docket to launch in 2020, and a mission to the moon Europa, which is, kind of a place that's on a short list of places that are possible places for microbial life to exist. So, yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of missions that have been approved. So there's a lot to look forward to for NASA's missions.
And we have this giant replacement for Hubble going up. Was it next year?
2019. So yeah, or is it 2018? Right now I'm drawing a blank. But the James Webb Space Telescope is going to be pretty amazing. It's amazing technology. That's one thing. That's kind of why the mission has taken so long to get built, and right now it's built, but they're just testing it out to make sure that everything works. There's this giant sunscreen that needs to unfold in space, and the mirror itself is the biggest mirror ever flown in space, so that needs to unfold. So it's a lot of technological hurdles had to be crossed to get this spacecraft in space, and it's going to be located out what's called a Lagrangian point between the Earth and the Moon, kind of a stable place gravitationally. But so unlike Hubble, we can't go and fix it or update it over time like we were able to do with the Hubble Space Telescope. So there's a lot riding on this mission. It's a different type of telescope. It's a infrared telescope, so that the pictures will be different, but I think it's going to be able to tell us a lot more about the history of the universe, of our galaxy, and scientists are really, really excited to be able to have this at their disposal. So fingers crossed that it's all going to work well.
And I heard one of them say that it might even be able to tell us if one of those Kepler planets actually has life on it.
Right. Yeah, that's a possibility. It'll have the ability, we think, to detect atmospheres around distant exoplanets. So that's one of the telltale signatures of possible life would be, you know, an atmosphere similar to ours, oxygen, nitrogen. Another indication of life would be methane in the atmosphere. And there are other telltale signatures that even from very, very distant exoplanets that would be able to give us indications that, you know, possible life on other worlds.
Nancy, thank you so much for not only your reporting on Universe Today, but these incredible stories from space.
Well, thank you so much, Steve.
Veteran space journalist Nancy Atkinson, editor of Universe Today. The book is called The Incredible Stories from Space. We're going to continue our conversation with Nancy after the bell with a preview of some big future missions. We're going to post our full conversation on the Opening Bell podcast as soon as this broadcast is over this morning. You can also follow Nancy on Twitter at Nancy_A, and you can follow the Universe Today at Universe Today and follow them at universetoday.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:39 on this Tuesday edition. Samsung says a bad battery design and a rush to release an updated version of the Galaxy Note 7 caused some of the devices to overheat and explode. The company had a report release on Sunday night, which it says the two separate battery malfunctions caused some Note 7 phones to overheat and catch fire. We want to update on the situation now, what's happening with Samsung, the Galaxy Note. And Bridget Carey is with us from CNET Update. She's been following this story very closely. Good morning, Bridget.
Hey, good morning.
How are you? Glad to have you on the show this morning, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me. This is just... Wow. Yeah, I mean, you wait all this time for Samsung to finally say something, and they go, hey, it was the batteries for two separate reasons, two separate times.
Yeah.
It seems a little odd, yeah.
A little bit of anticlimactic as well, because we kind of knew that was the problem, though, right?
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, some experts who were commenting before Samsung did also, you know, were thinking, well, there's got to be something with the phone itself. But they're not saying it's the phone itself. They're saying it's the battery. And they were very, very technical, though, about what was wrong with the batteries. It's interesting. When people think about a lithium-ion battery, they think it's just some black rectangle, you know. But actually, inside it looks a bit like a jelly roll dessert, where these positive and negative layers are kind of rolled up. And in this case, the first time the roll was wrong, and if the positive and negative touch, well, you have yourself, you know, a disaster. And there were times where it was really pinched in the corner. And then so they go to a second manufacturer, say, hurry, 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 pump out more batteries to fix the problem. And that manufacturer pumped them out so fast that they were touching again. And so you had a second issue like that. And to fix it, you know, we as consumers go, okay, so what are you going to do? And they say, well, we're going to do more battery tests. We're going to beef up our battery tests, you know, do more things like x-rays and spend more time on them and charge them and discharge them. And okay, that's good. But I'm left wondering how much of that is what, you know, other manufacturers do? How much of that is what you should have been doing in the first place?
Because the instructions here, the explanation, it's, you know, all of these papers and graphs, it's sort of like the bad instructions to something you would buy at IKEA, maybe the Karflunkla dresser or whatever. Do they release all of this information, Bridget, to give us a sense that they know how to prevent this in the future, or just to dazzle us?
Yeah, I mean, I think being over explanatory on everything was saying, hey, we know what went wrong, because, right, you can't trust Samsung if you still think that they don't understand what happened. But that said, they are taking more time with their next big phone. You know, normally they announce that the next S8 is going to come out during this big conference in February, but it's not going to be shown off there. So So clearly this has slowed them down a bit, and that could probably help with some consumer confidence that they're taking more time. What's also interesting from this whole debacle is that they're going to keep on with the Note brand, that the Note is the larger of their, you know, flagship phones, and they're going to still keep making that Note 8. So when they advertise the next time the Note comes around, you know, hey, trust us this time, it won't blow up. That'll be an interesting slogan. But they believe that there's enough fans out there to warrant continued use of the Note brand.
The question I have, too, about this is how much has this cost Samsung in terms of not just money, but also trust in terms of, you know, how much we're going to trust them moving forward?
Oh, it's you just can't calculate how much there's a problem because you have to wait until the next phones come out, right? It's unseen how much of this is an impact on the company. And I think, though, Samsung does have a lot of loyal fans, you know, to be quite frank. And people want to see them get back on track. But I think when you talk to anyone who works at a cell phone store and they have customers coming in going, Samsung, this one that blows up, right? They're not differentiating between what Note is and what the Galaxy S8 is. And, the whole brand itself is just tarnished right now.
There was also a lot of concern about whether or not there's still some of these potential fire notes out there. 96% is how many the firm says it's recovered. Is there still a danger from these phones, Bridget?
Yes, because even Verizon has said, let me take a step back. What they try to do to stop the danger is to push out an update that makes the phone unusable. It can never be charged again, and that way people who do want to keep it, perhaps as a collector item, will never be able to use it again. But people have gotten around that update and avoided that update, and Verizon has said that there are people out there who are still using the phone, thousands, in fact. So I like to hope that those people who are getting around it aren't still taking them on airplanes and you know, going around with them, and they're just kind of keeping them for the sake of that. It's just an odd product now, and they don't want to get rid of it. But I wouldn't be surprised to hear another story here and again pop up until they get rid of them all.
Yeah, and then the other part of this moving forward is the customers who had these devices, what they got, I'm guessing, money back, or they can get the new device when it comes out if they want it. You bring up a good point. Maybe some people won't want it.
Yeah, I mean, if at this point, it's a historical item, right? You know, we've never seen a recall like this before to this scale. And it's almost become something that people in the years from now might go, hey, remember the Note 8 or Note 7, I should say, you know, and then they should, you know, still have it. You never know.
This is also a good lesson for other companies out there who are watching. The rush to get things off to market never really ends successfully, does it?
Oh, yeah, especially when you just rush it the way they did. I mean, it was wrong from the start. There was poor communication. Customers were reaching out. They didn't know what to do. Some said, hold on and we'll give you another one. I mean, there was confusion. There was poor communication. And it was just kind of slapped together as a, we'll just pump out more to fix it fast. And when you rush like that, and when you put that kind of pressure on anything that is so technical, I think maybe we've learned how technical lithium-ion batteries are, too. And that nothing like this should be rushed when you have a bomb on your hand that could potentially explode. You know, like, let's take our time now, from now on, if there's any problems with cell phones, especially.
Bridget Carey is a senior editor at CNET. You can follow her at Bridget Carey on Twitter and at CNET Update. Bridget, thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell this morning.
Good to be here. Thanks.
By the way, yesterday there's some more information coming out about how much Samsung expends on all of this. They say the company says that they've wiped about $5.3 billion off of its operating profit from all of this mess with the Galaxy Note 7.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures are up just 5 points. NASDAQ futures up just about 0.75 points. S&P futures are now negative. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Good morning. Well, President Trump wasting no time to attack trade agreements. That's raising concern in Asia and in Canada and right here in the United States. The president formally withdrew the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal yesterday, and he is now going to meet with a representative of Canada to talk about his statement on putting an end to the NAFTA trade agreement. Didn't take long for agricultural groups to react, and they're not happy. Rich Giebert, who is the president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, said Illinois agriculture depends on free trade agreements to sell our products. Currently, 46% of Illinois exports go to Trans-Pacific countries, and the TPP was expected to increase Illinois cash receipts by $281 million and net exports by $127 million. Not very happy with the action by the president, because already we're looking at prices that are at two-year lows in agriculture, and we're looking at also the situation with grains that are falling. Yesterday, soybeans, March contract down 7.5. Wheat got a little help, up a nickel, but corn was unchanged. And livestock futures yesterday, a red screen across the board, hogs, cattle, and feeder cattle, all trading lower. Well, I'm heading for Murray, Kentucky, where I'll be speaking later today to a meeting of soybean growers. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday. It's January 24th. The National Association of Realtors releases its report on existing home sales today. The Association reported last month that fewer Americans signed contracts to buy homes in November. The decrease likely reflected the drag caused by rising mortgage rates and the shallow inventory of properties on the market. It says in a December 28 release that its seasonally adjusted pending home sales index fell 2.5% to 107.3. That's the lowest reading since the start of 2016. Pending sales declined in the Midwest, South, and West, while improving in the Northeast. The slowdown marked a reversal for the housing market, as sales growth has been solid for the past year. Completed sales of existing homes in November climbed to their highest pace in nearly a decade, reaching a seasonably adjusted annual rate of 5.61 million, the realtors say. But the pending sales contracts suggest that demand may be weakening now that the cost of purchasing a home have increased. Johnson & Johnson reports quarterly financial results today, and there are a couple of other big confirmation-related hearings going on Capitol Hill. More discussion about trade at the White House, more meetings with the president-elect about business and the economy. Those are just some of the things that could guide the markets as we move through this Tuesday, January 24th. A couple of other notes for you this morning. Businesses looking to invalidate California's fee for carbon pollution take their arguments to a state appeals court there today in a case that could determine the future of one of California's signature efforts to combat climate change. With a central piece of Governor Brown's legacy on the line, lawyers for the state and for environmental advocacy groups will defend a program that has been closely watched around the world as a potential model for controlling carbon emissions. Uncertainty surrounding the case has already been a major factor in upending the market for pollution permits, which consistently raised hundreds of millions of dollars a year until demand plummeted in 2016. The Justice Department wants a judge to throw out a lawsuit from Microsoft and keep a law that prohibits technology companies from telling customers when their government demands their electronic data. Microsoft says its customers have a constitutional right to know when the government collects private information about them. The company says the law also violates the First Amendment right to speak with customers. Microsoft says it gets about 3 requests every day, and many don't have end dates. Companies like Apple, Amazon, and Twitter have written court briefs supporting the lawsuit. The Justice Department says in its court filing it has an interest in keeping criminal investigations confidential. Microsoft doesn't have a standing to argue for its customers' constitutional rights, according to the Justice Department.